Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton, and our producer this morning. And it is Votorama weekend on Capitol Hill. That's right, the Inflation Reduction Act. Oh, it's an oxymoron right out of the box. Slimmed down version of the Build Back Better bill. It is aimed to, quote, make historic investments in the nation's social safety net. Now, here's what's in the bill. The creation of a 15% corporate minimum tax rate. Corporations with at least $1 billion in income have that new tax rate. They say taxes on individuals and households won't be increased, but common sense would dictate that if you tack 15% corporate tax onto the corporations, they may just pass that along in price increases, especially when you can pass anything along in a price increase right now with inflation. So why do I think we're going to end up paying that 15% corporate minimum tax rate? Prescription drug price reform. The Inflation Reduction Act would allow Medicare to negotiate the price of certain prescription drugs, potentially bringing down the price. Oh, boy, that'll be interesting to see if that really works out that way, or if we end up getting fewer drugs or lesser quality drugs. IRS tax enforcement. The IRS, they've said for years they've been underfunded and have been underperforming. This would invest $80 billion in the nation's tax agency over the next 10 years to go over people that don't pay their taxes. Well, good luck finding all those people that don't pay their taxes and enforcing it. The closure of the carried interest loophole. It's a tax code loophole enabling investment and private equity fund managers to pay a lower rate on their taxes. I'll go for that. They don't deserve all that money. Affordable Care Act subsidy extension. Medical insurance premiums under the Affordable Care Act subsidized by the federal government to lower premiums. Again, we'll see how that plays out. Remember, you can keep your doctor. Remember President Obama? And here's where the real investment in this bill is. Energy security and climate change investments. You see, it's the Inflation Reduction Act where we're going to spend billions on climate protection, tax rebates and credits for households to offset energy costs, investments in clean energy production, and tax credits aimed at reducing carbon emissions. Chuck Schumer thinks it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm not so sure, nor is Larry Kudlow.
The idea that it's inflation reduction is something out of George Orwell. It's not. By the way, the CBO came out with a preliminary scorecard, just preliminary stuff. But actually, the deficit gets worse for the next 4 years until it gets better after that. But the getting better is full of gimmicks, so I don't believe a word of it. And anybody who thinks more federal spending is not inflationary, or all these tax hikes, as you say, they're middle-class tax hikes. I agree with that. Pretty much across-the-board tax hike. The business tax hikes, Sean, are going to be brutal and will have a bad impact on real wages and typical family incomes.
That's Larry Kudlow talking with Sean Hannity. And probably lean more towards Larry's impressions of this than Chuck Schumer's. As we continue, the tensions continue with China. And you saw the live fire exercises that the Chinese firing at targets around Taiwan, pretty intense videos coming out of there. Here's what the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, had to say.
These provocative actions are a significant escalation. The fact is, the speaker's visit was peaceful. There is no justification for this extreme, disproportionate, an escalatory military response.
So how did we get there? Well, there are several people that have opinions on how we got there. The former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, his thoughts on President Biden and China.
You have a Chinese Communist Party who is clearly testing him. And he said, no, we can't challenge them by even allowing a member of Congress to travel to an independent sovereign nation. Make no mistake about it. They see weakness. They see inaction. and the tyrants, the bad guys in the world, will try to drive a truck to that. And that's bad for Americans all across our country. It'll be bad for jobs. It'll be bad for our economy. And it'll be really dangerous if we have to put our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines in harm's way to protect something that we could have deterred in the first instance.
Former Secretary of State speaking with Harris Faulkner on the Fox News Channel. And the Speaker of the House in November, we hope, Kevin McCarthy, was also talking about China yesterday.
Biden has shown weakness from the very beginning from Afghanistan. Watch how he allowed China to speak to America, first on our soil in Alaska. And then what did he do when Nancy Pelosi was going to Taiwan? He showed weakness again, said, well, the military doesn't want her to go. Well, it's Nancy. Why didn't he stand up for America and say China is not going to dictate when and who goes to Taiwan? China would have had a different opinion about what they said and done.
So, you know, sometimes fewer words really express the sentiment. I think Lindsey Graham kind of sums it all up in 7 seconds.
Every time they're faced with a bully, aggression from a bully, they get weak-kneed, which means you get more bullying.
Pretty simple stuff. You'd think fighting crime would be common sense. I'm not going to say it's an easy thing to do these days, but you would think there would be some common sense to come along with it. The mayor of New York is trying. Eric Adams is trying. He has a crazy district attorney in New York, Alvin Bragg. We'll hear from him in a second. But the very latest from the New York City mayor, Eric Adams, at this is a great quote.
They say the definition of insanity is to do the same thing repeatedly, but expect different results. Our criminal justice system is insane. It is dangerous, it is harmful, and it's destroying the fabric of our city.
He nails it right there. And this is the New York City Mayor, Eric Adams. He continued.
Our recidivism rates have skyrocketed. And those who say that the predicted wave of recidivism wouldn't happen, and the studies that claim to show that the rate of arrests for violent felonies has not changed since the reforms were passed, I have one word for you. Wrong. You are wrong.
Pretty basic. He knows what he's doing. The New York City District Attorney does not know what he's doing. Alvin Bragg. And the number of people that you, I don't know if you've seen some of the videos, you have, you know, teens attacking police and they take them in and then they're out, you know, within hours on their own personal recognizance. There's no cash bail. They just go. They arrest them after they beat up police officers and then they're back out on the street. Same thing with some of the more serious crimes. And this is the New York District Attorney sticking up for himself.
I am, you know, proud of what we're doing at the Manhattan DA's office. Just mentioned some of the work we're doing. Really encouraged by the fact that homicides are down, shootings are down year to date in Manhattan. And so, yes, lots more work to do, but trending in the right direction.
Trending in the right direction. Major crime in New York City is up like 37%. There are like 10 top criminals in New York that have committed hundreds of crimes. It's an amazing stat. And I saw it the other day, and it's like there's this handful of people that they bring them in, and then they're just back out on the street, and they continue to commit the crimes. And those are the recidivists that Mayor Adams had referred to. And you can thank the New York City District Attorney for all those folks back on the street. It is 6:17. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAO. We've got Jennifer Harper coming up. We'll be talking with Jim Trustee. We're going to talk with Jim about some of the testimony on Capitol Hill from Christopher Wray, the FBI director. Also with Jim, we'll talk about the federal charges now in the Breonna Taylor case in Louisville, Kentucky. John Gizzi will join us. We're going to talk with John about the Votorama that is coming this weekend. That's on the way. Also, we will be talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. There was the big score for U.S. forces as we took out al-Zawahiri, the head of al-Qaeda, and we'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer about that. And also coming up, KT McFarland will put it all in perspective when it comes up to Taiwan and where we are with U.S. foreign policy. So it's all on the way here on the Saturday Morning Update. But first off, we've got Al BD in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Maryland, I just checked out the traffic cameras around the Beltway. I didn't see any crashes, and I don't have any reports of any construction being set up in Prince George's County or in Montgomery County, either on the inner loop or on the outer loop. In Montgomery County on 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not tapping the brakes on the northbound side and on the southbound side. Back in Prince George's County, between the two beltways, on the BW Parkway and 95, no delays being reported northbound or southbound. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny, hot, and humid on this Saturday. High temperatures around 90 degrees. Isolated afternoon storms will be possible, some of which may bring some heavy rainfall, isolated damaging winds as well. Later on tonight, storms come to an end later on. Lows back in the 70s. Partly cloudy on your Sunday. Isolated storms possible. High temperatures in the lower 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
72 degrees in the nation's capital, 619 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday Morning Update, and we're trying to make sense of the news out of Texas. And I don't think anybody can make any sense whatsoever out of Secretary Mayorkas and President Biden and Vice President Harris's border policies. All they can say is the border is secure, as we see thousands pour in every day. Well, it's gotten interesting and it's gotten a bit personal between Texas and D.C. and Texas in New York. Governor Abbott has been sending busloads of migrants to Washington, D.C. He's now started to send them to New York City. And you may recall that there have been flights all over the country, private charter flights. They are sending migrants around the country, various locations. Typically, they go in the middle of the night, and they're charter aircraft. They land late at night, and they're not announced, and it's not like a media opportunity. So this stuff is going on. Abbott's the governor of Texas. Greg Abbott has had enough, and he kind of lays out sort of what he's dealing with in Texas.
Listen, in any one sector in the state of Texas, we have more than 5,000 people come across that sector every single day. And so, listen, we're full in the state of Texas. Our communities are overrun. And I started busing people to Washington, D.C. when local officials could not handle the number of people that had come across our border.
That's pretty cut and dry, isn't it? He did a lot of media this week. Here's another one of the governor's media appearances on Thursday.
Public officials across the country, they do need to realize the magnitude of the chaos created by Biden's open border policies. They're up in arms about a few thousand people coming into their communities over the past few months. Listen, in any one sector in the state of Texas, we have more than 5,000 people come across that sector every single day. And so, listen, we're full in the state of Texas. Our communities are overrun. And I started busing people to Washington, D.C. when local officials could not handle the number of people that had come across our border.
Well, here's how Governor Abbott of Texas feels about Mayor Bowser and Mayor Adams in New York.
They're a bunch of hypocrites. They're fine with illegal immigration flooding across our borders and the crisis caused by the Biden administration, as long as it stays down in Texas.
Well, here's how Corinne Overhead Jean-Pierre at the White House, the press secretary, feels about Governor Abbott.
It's the latest stunt from the governor, another stunt of busing desperate migrants across the country, he's using them as a political ploy. I mean, this is what he's been doing, and it's shameful.
So that's kind of the latest of Texas versus New York and Washington, D.C. Not quite a football game, is it? We continue with a very interesting hearing on Capitol Hill this week in the Senate. Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI, was there, and Ted Cruz took off his cowboy boot and put it up on his desk, and this is kind of how that all went down.
President Biden, who was sworn in under Betsy Ross flags. It's not just the Betsy Ross flag. Also on this list, is the Gadsden flag as a symbol of violent extremism. Now, the state of Virginia has a license plate for the Gadsden flag, as do many other states. I think people would be astonished to find that having that license plate, the FBI indicates that you're a violent extremist. Also included on this is a text that I was particularly struck, is the Gonzales battle flag. Come and take it. As indicative of being a violent extremist militia. Well, I will self-report right now that every day in the Senate I wear my boots that have the Gonzales battle flag on the back of them. Director Ray, what are y'all doing? This makes no sense. Do you agree with this FBI guidance that the Betsy Ross flag and the Gadsden flag and the Gonzales battle flag are signs of militia violent extremism?
You know, not a great day for Christopher Wray, and, you know, I wouldn't want to be up there under the lights, you know, being grilled. But Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa kind of nails it here with the director of the FBI.
I've got seven people on my side of the aisle want their additional 3 minutes. Is there any reason we couldn't accommodate them for 21 minutes or whatever Democrats want second rounds to?
Senator, I had a flight that I'm supposed to be hightailing it to out of here, and I had understood that we were going to be done at 1:30, so that's how we ended up where we are.
If it's your business trip, you got your own plane. Can it wait a while?
Sorry, to be honest, I've tried to make my break as fast as I could to get right back out here.
And you took more than 5 minutes.
Good stuff. One quick note here. New York Times, Paul Krugman, one of the writers up there and a traditional supporter of the Democratic Party and liberal administrations, he said that the economy is experiencing a Biden boom. And he was mocked on social media, and I got to thinking about it, and I said, yeah, there is a Biden boom, actually. Boom, there went my 401k. Boom, there went grocery prices. Boom, there went gasoline prices right through the roof. So maybe Paul Krugman had it right after all. 6:26, it is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We've got Jennifer Harper and Jim Trusty coming up in the next half hour, so stick around with us.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
In the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in June, Indiana has become the first state in the nation to pass new legislation restricting access to abortions. Indiana lawmakers on Friday approving the abortion ban with some exceptions, including cases of rape, incest, and to protect the life and physical health of the mother. The Republican governor, Eric Holcomb, immediately signed that bill. A Texas jury has ordered conspiracy theorist Alex Jones to pay $45 million in punitive damages to the parents of a child who was killed in the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre. That's added to the $4.1 million he has to pay for the suffering that he put them through by claiming for years that the nation's deadliest school shooting was a hoax. The parents of 6-year-old Jesse Lewis said they were tormented by the InfoWars host false claims that the worst classroom shooting in the U.S. history was orchestrated by the government to tighten gun laws. And Taiwan says that China's military drills appear to simulate an attack on the island. Multiple Chinese warships and aircraft crossed the median line of the Taiwan Strait. That, of course, following Speaker Pelosi's visit to Taipei. Taiwan's Ministry of National Defense said today that its armed forces have issued an alert, dispatched air and naval patrols around the island, and activated land-based missile systems in response to the situation with China. 6:32, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Virginia, on the inner loop of the Beltway, traffic is slow between the Dulles Toll Road and Georgetown Pike. On the outer loop of the Beltway in Virginia, no delays being reported. On 66 in Fairfax County, you're at speed on the eastbound side and on the westbound side. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, if you have cruise control set, it lanes are clear, both northbound and southbound. And in D.C., New York Avenue, westbound, that's jammed up between Bladensburg Road and Fairview Avenue. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny, hot, and humid on this Saturday. High temperatures around 90 degrees. Isolated afternoon storms be possible, some of which may bring some heavy rainfall. Isolated damaging winds as well. Later on tonight, storms come to an end later on. Lows back in the 70s. Partly cloudy on your Sunday. Isolated storms possible. High temperatures in the lower 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 72 degrees, 6:33 on the Saturday morning update.
The latest news and information sent straight to your inbox with the WMAL newsletter.
Register today at WMAL.com/email.
Saturday morning update, first weekend in August. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper is with us. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Rick.
Well, it's a big weekend in the Big D, and I looked over the speaker list, and oh my, it's like the Lollapalooza of conservatives.
Wow, that's a very good way to put it, and my way of putting it is yeehaw, CPAC rides again, because indeed, the Conservative Political Action Conference, also known as CPAC, is still underway in gorgeous Dallas, Texas down there. And just a few details about this, they have 142 speakers, and they are from just every political and cultural realm you can think of, Capitol Hill, conservative news media, et cetera. There's just cause-driven activists, authors, primetime stars, you know, the Fox News crew is there, entrepreneurs, journalists, state officials, GOP activists, et cetera. And, of course, former President Trump is the keynote speaker about all of this. But the one good thing about CPAC is that it's always a cheerful event. Have you ever noticed that, Rick? That it's upbeat, it's positive, it's forward-thinking. And indeed, the theme for this event, which started on Wednesday, actually, is America Uncanceled and Awake, Not Woke. Those are the two themes for this particular event, and it's going to go through Sunday. And a couple of topics, I looked them up just for the heck of it. This is what's on the master agenda. They have a plan to rescue America. They talk about Biden's worst nightmare, making woke go broke. The best is yet to come. See, there's that optimism I like so much. And also, she's back, an interview with Sarah Palin, who also was there along with Steve Bannon. How about that? You can watch this live online. Very easy. Just go to CPAC.org, and you can watch it yourself.
Nancy Pelosi kept people on their heels this week, including the Defense Department and China.
Yes, and also it pretty well kept the press engaged as well. I mean, it was such an unusual and almost a sudden event there. And a lot of the political analysts on both sides of the aisle were continuing to kind of wonder, well, why did she go there again? And are we in danger? You know, there's kind of like a lot of nervous murmuring still going on. And, you know, you have to remember this event has been on Mrs. Pelosi's calendar for a while. She announced her intent to go to Taiwan all the way back in July 19. So it wasn't something that happened overnight. But here's a couple of headlines to see what the press had to say. Pelosi's trip to Taiwan is high risk and low reward. That came from the Boston Globe. The damage from Pelosi's unwise visit to Taiwan must be contained. That was from the Washington Post, believe it or not. Red fury, China furious after Pelosi lands in Taiwan, promises all necessary measures to defend itself. That came from Fox News. And let's just do one more. Pelosi arrives in Taiwan, defying Beijing, and that came from the Associated Press. So also, there were people talking about how the stocks fell. That's what the press had to say, and I'm sure we're going to hear a bit more.
I think typically there's been an attitude that when Republicans are in charge, they're a little more kind of business savvy. They're less from academia and more from the real world. And you've got a survey on governors?
Well, actually, this is pretty interesting. This is a newly released data from the U.S. Labor Department, and it confirms the fact that Republican governors and legislatures are essentially leading the way to getting America back to work, and this is all in the numbers. And our friends over the Republican National Committee went over these endless numbers, and here's what they found. Through June, 9 of the top 10 states for jobs recovered since the coronavirus pandemic began are led by Republican governors, and all 10 states have Republican-controlled legislators. The top 5 states for job recovers, in fact, are all Republican-led. 12 of the 15 states that have more jobs than when the pandemic hit are Republican-led. Let's give them a shout-out here. They are Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Montana, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, and Utah. Republican-led states, on average, have recovered more than 102% of their lost jobs compared to just over 89% for Democrat-run states. Again, this is coming from the Republican National Committee. They're quoting numbers from the U.S. Labor Department. And just a little more here. Out of the top 20 states with the lowest unemployment rates, 16 are led by Republican governors. 16 have Republican-controlled legislatures. The average unemployment rate from the nation's 28 states with Republican governors is 3%. And among Democrat-led states, that number is 3.8%. And in summary, red states are leading the economy recovery. And that's, again, coming from Republican National Committee and the U.S. Labor Department. So good morning with lots more numbers for you.
A lot of speculation about Mike Pence, what his plans are for 2024. He's certainly making it to those primary states. You wrote about it this week.
Yes, indeed. Whenever we're prognosticating about what's going to happen in 2024, we have to look at all of the little signals that people are putting out. And I got a little notice that former Vice President Mike Pence, he's a very busy man, but my gosh, he's got a new book on the way. And that's always an indicator that somebody's interested in running for something. And Simon & Schuster has announced it will publish a book called So Help Me God by Mr. Pence. That's Mr. Pence is going to be released on November the 15th. This is what the publisher has to say. The book recounts his journey from his youth in Columbus, Indiana, to the vice presidency. It is the inside story of the Trump administration by its second highest-ranking official of a profound faith that has guided Pence throughout his life. This is, again, coming from the publisher. They say the most robust defense of the Trump record of anyone who served in the administration, So Help Me God, the book, also chronicles President Trump's severing of their relationship on January 6th. So that's a very telling bit of content right there. And also it's going to come out in hardcover and an e-book and also an audio book that Mr. Pence is going to narrate himself. And you also have to remember that he founded a group called Advancing American Freedom over 18 months ago. So you got to look at the, you know, another indicator that maybe he's got his eye on 2024. This is a nonprofit with a very clear mission, Rick. It says Advancing American Freedom promotes and defends the successful policy of recent years that yielded unprecedented prosperity at home and restored America's strength abroad while elevating traditional American values. And they have a pretty formidable group of advisors, 39 of them. Just a couple of people on the list that are behind this group: Newt Gingrich, Gary Bauer, Kellyanne Conway, Ken Blackwell, Ed Folner, Star Parker, Betsy DeVos, Rick Santorum, Scott Walker, Ed Meese, Marjorie Dannenfelser, Larry Kudlow. Those are just a couple. I know a lot of our listeners may recognize those names. If you're curious, go to advancingamericanfreedom.com.
It's like every day on the news we see how inflation is whacking us here in America, but you don't see too much about what's going on globally, but you have got us covered this morning.
Oh, brother, do I ever. We're going to go over to Ipsos. This is a very globally minded pollster. I like to look at their numbers quite a bit, but this is a very massive poll that they have conducted, and it reveals that practically the whole planet is having pocketbook issues. This is a survey of 21,515 people in 28 nations, and it found that 76% of the respondents say the cost of their food is increasing, 73% said the same about their utilities, 72% felt that way about their general household shopping, 71% say their motoring fuel costs are going up. Another 58% expect that the overall cost of socializing will go up. 46% expect that personal add-ons like the gym or Netflix, that kind of stuff, is also going to go up. And here's how people are describing themselves as well in this particular poll. They say 30% of the global population say they are just about getting by financially these days. 28% say they are doing all right financially. 19% say they are finding it quite difficult to manage their financial situation. 12% say they are living comfortably, and 10% are finding it very difficult to manage their financial situation. Again, this is an Ipsos Inflation Monitor poll, 21,515 adults, and here's where they're from: Argentina, Australia, Belgium, Brazil, Canada, Chile, Colombia, Denmark, France, Germany, Great Britain, India, Italy, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, Netherlands, Peru, Poland, South Africa, South Korea, Saudi Arabia, Spain, Sweden, Turkey, and the U.S. That was conducted May 26th through June 30th and released just recently, July 30th. So that's what's going on out there, Rick.
Spanning the globe. Thank you very much. Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Thank you.
It's my pleasure, Rick. Have a good weekend, everybody.
It is 6:45. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We'll talk with Jim Trusty next, and we've got John Gizzi coming up. We've got Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. We've got KT McFarland for you. First off, though, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, I just looked at the cameras in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. I didn't see any crashes, and I have no reports of any construction being set up yet. Inner loop and outer loop are at speed in Maryland. In Montgomery County on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not tapping your brakes on the northbound side or on the southbound side. Lanes are clear. Now back in Prince George's County, between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway and 95, I don't have any reports of anything in the road to slow you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny, hot, and humid on this Saturday. High temperatures around 90 degrees. Isolated afternoon storms will be possible, some of which may bring some heavy rainfall, isolated damaging winds as well. Later on tonight, storms come to an end later on. Lows back in the 70s. Partly cloudy on your Sunday. Isolated storms possible. High temperatures in the lower 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 72 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:46 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty is with us, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, the FBI director, Christopher Wray, was in the hot seat for a number of items on Capitol Hill, Senate hearings. Highlights, though, around the Hunter Biden investigation. What came out of this that was what you would see as a highlight of his testimony and the questions that were asked?
Well, you know, he deserves this hot seat as the starting point. And I think the focus that I think is most interesting about the types of questions he's getting are the ones that go back to the letter recently sent from Senator Grassley to Christopher Wray. And there's really three interesting parts of that letter that are very damning when you take them individually and collectively and you think about what's going on with this FBI. I would call it a Jim Comey legacy FBI. The first part of the letter refers to a previous letter written by Grassley complaining about the same assistant special agent in charge, that's like the number two guy, at the Washington field office of the FBI. And the complaint from the previous letter, although it's not detailed in this current one, is that that supervisor was being very political, overtly political, on social media, and that they hadn't even gotten a full response about that. In other words, you know, why is this guy that's an FBI management undoubtedly taking pot shots at Trump or whatever else that would tote the liberal line? The real sidetrack on this that I just want to make for a quick second, Rick, is the arrogance of it is just astounding. I mean, these are people that have been in government for a long time. They've been in law enforcement. They know they're not supposed to be out there stirring the pot on social media from their position and talking about politics. But I really think that the FBI leadership is still infected, and it's been created and supported this way by Jim Comey and unchanged by Chris Wray. So it's a small part of the letter, but again, I think a bigger malady in terms of what's affecting what used to be a premier law enforcement agency in this country. And I'll do the usual caveat, Rick, which is there's a ton of rank and file agents that are great people that do a great job, that are apolitical in their approach, and it really can't stand what's happening with FBI management. I hear from some of these folks from time to time, and I appreciate it, and they're very supportive of the criticism. So that issue is still on the table in terms of FBI leadership and their willingness to be very political, unfortunately. Related to that is the second part, and this is really the heart of the complaint from Senator Grassley, which is that he had a bunch of whistleblowers come out from the FBI and tell him that the Washington field office had falsely shut down incriminating information about Hunter Biden's criminality and reclassified it, or lied, by saying it's all just Russian disinformation. And, you know, that is an amazing and an amazingly depressing moment in law enforcement, because if an agent in Washington tells an agent in Delaware, hey, that's a false lead, this is Russian disinformation, that really does have the potential for sabotaging a legitimate case. It also creates an obligation, if Hunter Biden is ever charged, for the prosecutors to turn that information over. And that could lead to reasonable doubt at a criminal trial. So, you know, never underestimate how damaging it is for an FBI agent in Washington to decide to poison the well for prosecutors and investigators up in Delaware. And so that's a big part of the letter, is talking about, you know, that they want answers as to whether these whistleblowers have it right. It seems to be that they're on the right track, because the assistant special agent in charge has been knocked down to a different position by Christopher Wray. So that seems to be an acknowledgement that these guys are telling the truth. And then there's a really kind of hard to follow part of the letter from the outside that appears to be really devastating. And that is, they talk about how the FBI reached out to these congressmen in August of 2020. We're talking, you know, the summer buildup to the election. And they came over and gave a briefing that was unsolicited. You know, a lot of times congressmen say, come talk to us. This is one where the FBI said, we need to come talk to you. And what they told Grassley and Johnson and I think some others is that this investigation about Hunter Biden is really about Russian disinformation at work. And knowing that there was this investigation by the committee with Grassley into Hunter Biden, they essentially said, you don't want to go promoting Russian disinformation in your report, which would come out just a month later. Now, at the time, Grassley and them were pretty undeterred. They heard it. They wanted to hear more. They wrote their report, and they kind of moved forward. But it really looks like in the fall buildup to 2020 that the FBI was consciously getting political, consistent with the mainstream media, and doing everything possible to keep Hunter Biden out of the news. And so, you know, this to me is really historic, devastating stuff, where the FBI is acting like the Praetorian Guard for the Biden administration. You know, Chris Wray was kept on by Biden. He's never said anything about really cleaning house in a way that I think would be good to hear. And I think that's the heart of the problem. You know, this is a group that's broken the rules when they're investigating Trump. They broke the rules in a different way when investigating Hunter Biden. And so it's really hard to trust their leadership and the attorney general, for that matter, when we're supposed to hear fair conclusions from them about what happened on January 6th or what happened with Hunter Biden. So these big historic investigations that are floating around are in the hands of people that are, again, proving time and time again to be political animals.
I believe I heard you say whistleblowers with an S. Are these FBI staff or agents?
They are. These are FBI folks, at least apparently. They're from inside, and they're saying, we saw what the ASAC, the assistant special agent in charge, was doing. We saw what a particular analyst was doing. There's been rumblings from multiple sources within the Bureau that there's essentially been political bias in favor of Democrats, and also political bias in terms of essentially purging political conservatives from the FBI ranks. And so there's a lot to look at. I'd love to have a really good inspector general investigation, or even a special investigator and special prosecutor, I should say, looking at all of this conduct, because it seems to have spread from the Comey days, or at least maintained its course since the Comey days, and it's going to take whistleblowers to make a difference, I think.
Well, I guess the reason it strikes me is if they are members of the FBI team and they're whistleblowers, and if they weren't telling the truth, aren't they basically lying to the FBI, and can't that put them in jail?
Yeah. I mean, look, they're all duty-bound to be honest when they're talking about these things, and again, I think Ray is acknowledging that the whistleblowers have it right. He demoted the supervisor in question. He has committed in front of the committee that he will not punish these whistleblowers, that they'll be allowed to continue doing what they're doing at the Bureau. You know, again, that's a hard check to cash over the long haul in terms of knowing whether it's going to hold true. But, you know, I'd like to see it go to the next level, which is whistleblowers becoming identified, you know, by their own willingness and coming forward and testifying in front of the committee about some of these shenanigans at the FBI.
Thank you, Jim. And that covers us on the Christopher Wray testimony. And we've got a little time in the 7 o'clock hour. I want to have you back on, and we'll talk about the Breonna Taylor case in Louisville, charges filed by the U.S. Department of Justice, and want to get your read on that development in the news. Jim Trusty, of course, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. 6:55, it is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. News coming up next at 7. Then we're back with John Gizzi. We'll check in again with Jim Trusty. Then we've got, of course, Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland on the way. And what may be probably the most important news story of the morning, Kim Kardashian and Pete Davidson are breaking up. That's right, Splitsville for Kim Kardashian and Pete Davidson from Saturday Night Live. Also, there are rumors floating around in the entertainment industry that Saturday Night Live may be coming to an end. It's like a 50-year run. Of course, Lorne Michaels still the executive producer, but there's stories swirling around about this could be the end for Saturday Night Live. 6:56 now on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.